This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Explain the Rambam, and that will really tie up that last sugya very clearly. What have you done in the new sugya so far, the Gemara, Rashi, and Tosfos? Have you done the Tosfos or the new sugya? Well, this is to read through the Rambam, and I'll tell you the things that I want to touch on today. V'chein chamisho sheyoshvu ala kisei v'lo nishbar, uvo acharin v'yoshov olo v'nishbar. Now, what's interesting is you'll remember the Magid Mishnah points out, and that's how the Shulchan Aruch goes, that it must be talking where he was leaning on them. He must have been holding them down, otherwise why are they going to be potter? Although the Rambam doesn't say that, so one of the things we need to deal is why doesn't the Rambam say that? Afal pi sheho yoroil hishaber kodim sheyoshov, even though it would have broken without him. Hoil v'kirev esh virosoy, I want to deal with those words. What the Rambam means by kirev, the reason he is chayev alone is because kirev esh virosoy, achron chayev. Since he was mekarev the shviro, I understand why he should be chayev, but why he alone? That's what I want to understand. Why he alone? It would have broken without him. Good, so he made it break quicker. So he's also chayev. Not only them. Although it would have broken without him, I might think that only they are chayev. No, he's also chayev. But why are they potu? So the Rambam tells us why. We would have gotten up if you weren't holding us down. But nowhere has the Rambam said that that he was holding them down. And you remember the Tur's Girsa is what? Sharayimim loy, ilu loy nismachta olov. Remember that? If you weren't bending on the bench, leaning on the bench, we would have gotten up. Well, so what do you mean? So why can't you get up now that he's leaning on the bench? So the Tur's Girsa is very attractive because it makes sense as to why the Rambam doesn't mention in the first case that he was leaning on them. It seems to be that the Tur is learning in the Rambam that he wasn't leaning on them, which makes the Rambam absurdly difficult to understand. But in the Lashon of the Rambam, it's better. He wasn't leaning on them, he was leaning on the bench. And his chayev, why, says the Rambam? The Rambam gives the reason for the chayev. The reason for his chayev is not because he held them down. That's not what the Rambam says. What's the reason? Kirev Shvirosu. So why do we have to come onto this business of, they say we would have gotten up? And if he wasn't holding them down, who's stopping them from getting up? So what I want to do is I want to learn the Rambam the Tur's way. I want to find a way of learning the Rambam the Tur's way where he wasn't leaning on, which is diametrically opposed to everybody else's limit in the sugya. The way the Tur has in the Rambam, he wasn't leaning on them, and yet he alone is chayev and they are potter. Why? Because kirev eshvirose. And we want to analyze what does that mean, hoyel the kirev eshvirose. Now the Chazon Ish does not learn the Rambam that way. But from the way the Chazon Ish learns, I want to use a yesod which the Chazon Ish develops to be able to explain the Rambam this way. That's what I want to do today. So let's look at the Chazanish inside. It's an unusually easy piece of Chazanish. Uncharacteristically easy piece of Chazanish. Right, so I want to start in the middle of that second column, Velulei Divrei HaGrozal. He asks a few kashas on the Vilna Gaon. And then he says, Velulei Divrei HaGrozal, were it not for the words of the Vilna Gaon, how your nearer it would appear to me. So now he gives his own parish. The Chazanish gives his own parish. Now he understands the Gemara, leaving aside the Vilna Gaon. She'en kan plug to klal b'das ha-poskim, that there is no machlokes among the poskim. That's how the Chazanish wants to learn it. That the principles, once you understand the principles, there's no machlokes. Bikore hadini. The principles of these halachas are as follows. She'im yoshov ha'achrei. The last one sat down. V'nishbar miyad. And it broke immediately. Koidem shehirgishu b'chiyuvam la'amod. Before the earlier ones were aware that they needed to stand up. Ha'achron chayiv. In such a case, the last one would be chayiv. Irrespective of whether it would or wouldn't have broken without him. That's not important. Even if it would have broken without him, the fact is he sat down and it broke before they had a chance to get up. That's principle number one. And if they did have the opportunity to get up but they didn't get up, kulam chayov, and then everybody's chayov. They're all chayov for sitting down and not getting up. This is very typical Chazanish, by the way. Just very straight, almost balabatish kind of logic, of straight understanding of the principles. V'im yoshov b'shosho yo nishbar biladoi. And if he sat down at a time that it would have broken without him, uchvar lo yolo im p'nai lamed, and they didn't have time to get up. In other words, it was about to break in any case, and then he sat down. Love me the Ovid, he did nothing. Right? We're not talking about it would have broken eventually, and then he sat down. It was about to break in any case, and he sat down. Vim tochvom ve'ikve malamud. And if he holds them down and doesn't let them get up, iloy hichbid ala sapsal eino ela gromo. If he doesn't apply any weight but holds them down with a gun, says, "You get up from there, I'll shoot you." That's gromo. Ufotter, and he would be potter. V'imichbid ala safsal, but if he was using his weight and holding them down together with his weight, chayev. Then he's chayev. Now, this is very, the system of learning is very opposite to the Brisker system of learning. Because here, the Chazanish has started with his logical, with his axioms, with his principles, which are all so logical it's difficult to argue with them, and he's now going to use these principles to understand the Gemara. Whereas the Briskers say, forget your principles, as logical as they might sound to you, they're irrelevant. You've got to learn what the Gemara says first. You see the difference in approach. And there was a lot of conflict between the Briskers and the Chazanish on many halakhic issues because of this difference in approach. So that's what he starts. And each of these principles which he's laid down, lichoira, make a lot of sense, don't they? Have you got any difficulty with any of them? Leaving aside the Gemara, just if we're trying to work it out without the Gemara. Have you got any logical difficulty with any of these principles which the Chazanish starts with?
The word "kodem shergishu b'chiyuvam la'amod," I mean, in the physical terms,
how do you... That as he sits down, it breaks. As it sits down, it would have broken a half an hour later, and they would have felt it, they would have heard a crack, and then they would have known it was time to get up. So we would say that it would have broken in a few hours' time. Still plenty of time for them to get up. But now that he sat down, the moment he sat, it broke. But why did it break? Because of their combined weight. His weight alone would not have broken it. That way they don't have a chance to get up. Vine. And now let's tackle the Gemara. Now he says, once you understand these principles, let's try and get through the Gemara. Bitchila porich b'gemara. In the beginning, the Gemara asks, Ilema debelav ivuloy isbe pshita. If we will say that without him it would have broken, it would not have broken, then of course he's potter. Then of course he's chayev. Hayinu, that is what the Gemara is asking, the itber tekev kishiyoshov. That the case is where the moment he sat down it broke. V'adayin lo yispik alamud, and they couldn't get up. There was no time to get up. Pshita, of course he's chayev. That's what the Gemara means in that first case. And then the Gemara goes on to say, and if without him it would also have broken, that means, says the Chazanish, Nami de Yoshev Bashviroso. Also, same case. As he sat down, it broke. Velohisif klumbi yeshivoso. But he didn't add anything because it would have broken at that moment in any event. He sat down at the moment of breakage. My COVID, what did he do? Those are the two tzedotim which the Gemara starts with. So what he's changed is that we're talking about immediate breakage. The only question is, because of whose weight did it break immediately? If it was because of his weight that it broke immediately, of course he's chayav. If it wasn't because of his weight that it broke, then of course he's potter. My COVID. Umashani in the Gemara answers, the loyit ber miyad, it didn't break immediately. That's in the answer that comes in. Elo la'achashor, it took an hour before it broke. But without him it would have taken 2 hours, it wouldn't have broken even then. And then the Gemara asks, so that way, by doing that, the Gemara has removed the first two cases, the first two extremes. The Gemara first viewed it that as he sat down it broke. Was it his weight that broke it, or wasn't it his weight that broke it? Either it's poshut that is chayiv, or it's poshut that is potter. Answer the Gemara, it's not so poshut. He didn't break immediately. It broke after an hour, and without him it would have broken after 2 hours. In that case, uforich, the Gemara asked him, "Kein bedinu de kulu chayiv," and then they should all be chayiv, because after all, there was time for them to get up. Now, so good, he sat down, lost. But now you've got 6 people sitting on a bench, and the bench can't take their weight, and it's going to break within an hour. So who cares that it would have broken within 2 hours, and now it would break within 1 hour? 6 people are sitting on a bench, and they're going to break it. So they should get up. They should all get up. And anybody who doesn't get up should be chayiv. Masik, and the Gemara concludes, the somach alayhu vehichbid al asafso. He leant over them and lent his weight to the safsa. Ve'ilu lo yichbid, and taka, if it weren't for his weight, havi groma ba'alma, then it would only be groma. And that's why it says that he leant on them and he broke it with his koach. The Bahadi the Somach Bahu Tovar, he broke it by leaning on them. He added his weight to it. Aval hashta de hichbid, but now that he added his weight, and without his weight it would not have broken. Now you can't say it's groma anymore. Now his weight broke it. The only thing is, it's not only his weight, it's his weight plus theirs. But he held them down. But kamashmal and the kirche kegufa, that teaches us that kirche kegufa. That's how the Chazanish wants to learn the Gemara, simply. So the others run into difficulties by trying to deduce the principles from the Gemara. The Chazanish resolves the difficulties by starting with first principles. The Chazanish goes more with the Shita of Reb Shimon Shkop. This is very much more the Derech HaHigoyon, which is that the human being is capable of working things out himself and applying the principles which he has developed to the understanding of the Gemara. It's not necessary to deduce everything only from the words of the Gemara. Completely different approach. But this leads the Chazanish to the following question. V'hai koicha kegufa, this chidush that koicha kegufa tzorichayim, that we need to analyze. The hokol mazik b'koichayim, every mazik is using koicha, isn't that so? V'chi itzrich lashmuin and the shoyve klishel chaveire b'koach yodav chayiv. Do I need to be taught with a special brisa that if I break if you have a beautiful Ming China vase, and I come and I break it with my hands, do I need a chiddush koicha kegufa? I'm using my koach. I'm using my hands. Of course, I don't need a special thing. Even if I throw an arrow, and that does the damage, which is clearly koicha, I don't need to be told that that's koicha kegufa. We know that I'm responsible for that. So why here does the Gemara have to say, come along and say, "V'kamashma ma'u d'tema"? What might have you have thought? The koicha lav kegufa dami, kamashma lan the koicha kegufa. Why do you have to be taught that? It's obvious that he's done it. He's broken the bench with his own weight. It's true he's used their weight as well, but he stopped them from getting up. He was using his koach to stop them from getting up. Why do I need a special limit? Why might I have thought he was potter? In all cases of nezek, a man is using koicha, and we know that he's chayav. Take a gun and shoot it. That's koicha. That's not gufa. That's koicha. Is there any havam in it? That if I shoot somebody's animal with my gun, that I'm going to be potu? Because it's koicha. It's not gufa. There's no such havam in it. So why do I need a special limud? That's what bothers the Chazanish. The Yefsha. So a way of understanding that is the following. The hocha that here, ilu acher hechezik bohem. What would be the case if somebody else held them down? He sat on the bench and added his weight to it, and somebody else held the others down. shelo yamdu, stopping them from getting up. Who yoshev al asafsal, and he sat on the bench, v'nishva, and it broke. Efsha deloy hayo chayev bekulu, it's possible that he would only be chayev for his section, not for the whole lot. The oisoy sheikve melamid gorom ha'ezek b'shut v'shelo. Because there were two partners in the nezek. The weight that broke the bench was the combination of his weight and their weight. They're pturim because they tana, we wanted to stand up. We're anusim, we couldn't stand up. But the man who's holding them down, he's a shutif. He's the one who's sharing the damage. Vafa gavda ha-ma'akif potu mishum groma. I, his potter, it's groma. What's he doing? He's standing there with a gun. And he says, if you get up on the bench, I'll shoot you. That's groma, so he's not going to be chayef. And we have a principle in Nezikin, that if there is joint liability and you can't claim from the one party, you can claim all the amount from one single party. What's that called in legal terms? If there are five people responsible. Yeah, but if you can't get from one or some of them, you're entitled to go for any one of them and get the whole amount from the one that you can. Is that several liabilities? So yeah, but afa gav dahama akif potu mishum gromo. Mikol mokom efsher kivan de chayev bedine shamayim. Since groma is chayev bedine shamayim, groma is not entirely potter. It's potter bedine odom. A beis din can't be mechayev, but bedine shamayim you're chayev. Lo yamrinen bezeki leke lishtalum mihay mishtalim mihay. Then we don't use the principle of several responsibility because there is a chiyev. It's just the chiyev bedine shamayim. If there was no chiyev at all, in other words, if the man who was holding them down got off scot free, then I could say that man number six has to pay for the whole lot because there's no, because the other one is potter. But since the man who held down the five is not potter in Ganser, he's chayev b'dinei shamayim, it's possible, says the Chazon Ish, it's a big chiddush, but the Chazon Ish wants to suggest it's possible that number six will be chayev only for 1/6 of the damage, not for the full amount. That's all he's chayev for, because for the rest he's not responsible. Who's responsible for the rest? The man who held the others down. And skip out the brackets and the inami deliker of Nachman. Vim kein yesh mokum loymar. And therefore, it's possible to say the hochol she also beis kriyus, that here where one man did two things: one, sheikve melamid, he stopped them getting up; two, vehichbid ala safsa, he applied his weight to the safsa. Choshiv gromo, I might have thought, but it's also gromo that he is not. In other words, that we've got to divide the nezek into six, and for 5/6 of it, he's chayev als gromo, which is chayev b'dinei shamayim, but not b'dinei odom. So for 5/6 is potur. Kamash malan, it comes to teach us the ma'de hichbid aleim v'shovar, that by applying his weight to them and breaking it, choshov kesheve b'yodayim, that's considered like direct breakage. Even though that had he held them down with a gun, that would have been gromo. Had he held them, now that he held them down with weight, that's not gromo, that's koichei. Even though it's the weight of the men that played the part in the breakage, mikol mokum chashiva kol hashviro koyche, the entire shvira is his koyach. That's how the Chazon Ish wants to learn the chiddush. That I might have thought that part of holding them down was considered gromo, and on that part he should be potur. Kamash v'lan, no, since he used his weight to hold them down and not a gun, that's not gromo, that's called koyche. So by holding them down until it breaks, he is chayev, because he's holding them down with weight, he's not holding them down indirectly. That's how the Chazon Ish wants to learn it. Now let's look at the Rambam. Let's look at the Rambam the Tur's way. וכן חמישו שיושבו על הספסל או על הכיסא ולי נשבע. ובו אחרין ויושב עלו. So let's learn it simply as it says. Five people were sitting down. The sixth one came and sat down on the bench next to them. ונשבע, and it broke. When did it break? Immediately. Let's say that it broke immediately. אף על פי שהיו רואי לי שובר בהם קודם שיושב, even though it would have broken with them alone before he sat down, eventually it would have broken as well. The last one is chayev because of kiruv shvira. What does that mean? Hoyel the kiruv shvirosoi. What the Rambam is saying is that just as the Chazon Ish said, that by holding them down until, using your weight to hold them down until it breaks, you chayev, using your weight to bring forward the time of breakage, you're also chayev. What is the essence? They're ptur, they want to tell that they're potur because they were going to get up before it broke. So the Chazon Ish's way, they now can't get up before it breaks. There are two reasons why they might not have been able to get up before it breaks. The one reason is because they're being held there until it breaks. And the other one is the breakage is being brought right to the present. It's relative. It's exactly the same thing. Whichever mechanism you use, it makes no difference. Relative to one another, you are bringing the time of breakage and the present to the same point. So whether you're doing it by holding them there until the breakage, or you do it by bringing forward the breakage to before they could get up, you're using your weight to bring about the breakage at a time when they couldn't get up. That's how the Rambam's lay. Hoyel the kirev shvira. So what he has done is he's brought the shvira forward, not holding them down. He's brought the shvira forward to a point where they can't get up. That's why Achron's chayv sharei imnim lo ilu lo nismachto olav. If you hadn't lent on the bench, hayino imdim kodim shiyishaber, we would have gotten up before it broken. We knew it was going to break eventually, but we would have gotten up. What you did was you used your weight to be makd in the shvira, to bring the shvira forward to such a degree that we couldn't get up. I think that's groma. That's really, as far as that's concerned, maybe that's on my part, that's groma. It's all of our weight, and it's true that my weight caused the breakage to take place earlier so that you couldn't get up. That's groma. I caused you to break it by bringing the time of breakage forward. But it's not because of kocha. Since I'm using my weight to do that, that's kocha, that's not groma. Since I'm sitting on the bench, that's kocha, that's not good. And Rambam reads beautifully the Tur's way then. And the continuation of the Rambam is Nasvim Yoshvu Ka'achas V'nishvar Kulam Chayovim. But if they all sat simultaneously, then they're all chayev. Then no one did anything more than the other. The only reason that the last one is chayev is because he was makariv l'shvira. He brought the time of shvira closer to their sitting, just as in the Chazon Ish's place, he maintained them sitting until the time of shvira. In the Rambam's case, he brought the time of shvira forward to the point at which they were still sitting. Your part, in other words, my part is not groma. So my sixth of it is not groma. The question is, what about yours? So they taina, you're responsible for ours because we would have gotten up and you made the time of the shvira coming. Good, I made the time of shvira coming earlier. That's like bending the corn down in front of the fire. Isn't it? The fire's there and the fire would have missed. I bend the corn down and the fire catches. It's exactly the same. You were sitting there, you would have gotten up before, but I brought the shvira into your course by making it earlier. That's groma. And we say, yeah, it would have been groma if it wasn't that you were using your own weight to do it. By using your own goof to do it, that's not koche, that's goof. That's not groma, that's koche. And then the hoyel the kirev shvirosa becomes right. So the Turus Girsa, using this principle of the Chazon Ish, the Turus Girsa then reads beautifully in the Rambam. The Rambam makes sense, one understands the halachic principle, the whole thing works well then. But that's not how the Shulchan Aruch learns it, obviously. You remember the Shulchan Aruch puts in as a condition, that was the Vilna Gaon, puts in as a condition that he's leaning on them, like the Magen Mishnah does. If you've got our Girsa, you've got to learn like the Magen Mishnah, that they were leaning on him, because that's what they say. If you wouldn't have leaned on us, we would have gotten up. So if you're learning our Girsa, you've got to learn like the Magen Mishnah. But if you're learning the Vilna Gaon's Girsa, if you're learning the Tur's Girsa, then you don't have to say that the Magen Mishnah that he was leaning on them at all. If he wasn't leaning on them, why are they potter? Why didn't they get up? Because it broke immediately. And what's the chiddush of the Gemara if it broke immediately? As the Chazon Ish says, that's the pshita in the beginning. If it broke immediately, isn't that poshut? No, we say. So I might have thought that he's chayev only for his six. Kamash malan, that since koicha kegufa, he's chayev for the full amount. In other words, I would have known for sure that he was chayev for something. If he sat down at the moment he sat down it broke, and had he not sat down it wouldn't have broken yet, then clearly he's chayav for something. The chiddush is that he's chayav for everything. Why? Because they say you used your koyach, you used your weight to be makariv the shvira, and we couldn't get up in time. But this isn't groma. This is not called groma. The chiddush is, I might have thought this was groma, kamash malan, that it's not. As the Chazanish himself says further on, it's not really, the words of the Gemara become a little bit difficult, but he's prepared to live with that. Okay, let's look at the new sugya. What is the principle that underlies this whole piece of Gemara? What difference does it make who's Metapel Ben Avela? A 100, now the ox is worth 10, the carcass is worth 10. What difference does it make if I give you 90 and the carcass, or if I take the carcass and give you 100? So it's a trouble of disposing. And so what's the maskun of the Gemara? Who has the trouble of disposing of it? The Nizak. Why? The Psukim. But why does the Torah tell us that? What's the reason for the Psukim? So now we know that that's what the Rebbe Yishlom wants. We've got the Psukim, we know that Rebbe Yishlom wants the Nizak to be Metapel Ben Avela. Is that really fair? Is it really fair?
Scholar would say that the Mazik should give a Kabbalah. Because he caused the Mazik, so he should have a Tichah.
Right.
The Psukim comes to teach the Chiddush that the Nizak is in fact.
The Nizak, so why? It
seems like that, you know, the fact
that why the Nizak?
He gets damaged. On the one hand, he's innocent, but he's damaged. But on the other hand, the fact that he was damaged, maybe there's certain.
Yeah, that's for when you give a shiur on mysticism, you can give the you can talk about that. Yeah. Yeah. The Nizak should have the trouble. But why? The Nizak's really an innocent party. How does it work in law here? It's the same thing, isn't it? The Nizak Metapel Ben Avela, doesn't it? How does it work? If I smash your car up, I don't have to take the wreck. If we establish that the wreck is worth a certain amount, I pay the difference. So why in regular law do they do that? It's also not fair.
Can he sue you for The time you spent.
I suppose not. But for the time that you spent selling the wreck.
Selling the wreck, the hire of car in the meantime.
But no, that's something else. That's something else. But for the wreck itself, why in secular law is the nizak metatel b'neveilah?
Because if you own something, you're liable for it and you're involved with it.
So you still have the ownership, in other words, it's still yours.
You know the risk.
That's how you want to say the svar is. It's still yours, the ownership, that's still yours. The ownership didn't change because I damaged it. Is that how it works? Is that the svar? Is not part of your loss.
That's part of your assets.
Right.
That's the difference between what you have and what you've lost.
Okay, so now there's an important, it's interesting because there's now an important ethical approach which results from all this. Let's give you the example where the way we normally view Nezek is not like that. The way we emotionally view Nezek is not like that. If I being absolutely honest with yourselves, if you're in a car park and you open the door of your car and it scratches the car next to you minutely, there's just a scratch which if you don't know that it's there you won't even see, but it is there. Do you leave a note on the car next to you with your address and acceptance of liability, or do you drive off? Okay, so psychologically, how do you justify the fact that you drive off? What do you use? What method of justification do you use? You've been a mazik.
You say the damage is so minimal.
Right. The car still works. The car still works. Nobody can notice it. Nothing's really been damaged. Okay. The basis of that is that we view damage incorrectly. The basis of that is that we view damage as, does he still have what he had before? He had a nice spanking new red car, and he's still got a nice spanking new red car. Nothing's really changed. But the fact is that to have that fixed is going to cost him 100 rand. To have the car put back to what it really was in the beginning is going to cost him 100 rand. That's really what's happened. Now, what would happen if I'm sitting next to that, the same thing, I get into my car, person next to me is getting into his car, and he sees me, he comes up to me, and he says, I wonder if you can help me. I've got a building society check for 1,000 rand. It's guaranteed and all the rest of it. I need cash. Do you by any chance have? He says, as a matter of fact, I do. I've just drawn cash from the bank. I've got 1,000 rand for you. Give me the check. He signs it over to you and you give him the money. As he's driving off, you realize you've only given him 900. There's still 100 in your pocket. What do? You run after him. You run after him. He's given you 1,000 or you phone him when you get back. You find his name and address and you say, I've got 100 rand. You wouldn't dream of leaving it. What's the difference? In both cases, you've stolen 100 rand. What is the difference? Why do we feel so emotionally comfortable about driving off after having scratched his car? And we don't feel emotionally comfortable after stealing 100 rand from him? Because we don't see nezek as the taking away of an asset. We see nezek as to what extent have I incapacitated him? To what extent is he suffering? If he's not suffering, I haven't damaged him. That's how we look at it. That would be if the bailim was metapel ben avela, if the mazik was metapel ben avela, that would be right. Then we're dealing with objects. He had a cow, and I damaged it, so I must give him back a cow. And the avela, that's my business. I've got to give him back what I took. But if I've just scratched his car, he had a car and he's still got a car. Do you see the difference? Are we dealing with value or are we dealing with objects? If we're dealing with objects, it becomes emotionally easy to justify the fact that he's still got the object that he had before. The fact that it's worth 100 rand less, no, okay, but nobody knows that. It's not going to make any difference. Because he's still got the object that he had before. But if I look at a motor car as a pile of 50 rand notes, a high pile of 50 rand notes, and I take off the top two, then it's in bad. Then I'm not prepared to do it anymore. It's different. So it's the relationship, the way we view the nizikim that we cause one another, that is so completely different. I gave the other shiur the example that a caster of mine asked me. A nice psychological kasha he asked. He's a man who loves books. He loves books so much that he has an arrangement with the good bookshops in Durban where he lives. Whenever a new shipment of books comes in, they phone him. They keep the books aside and they phone him so that he can have a look through and pick out whatever he wants, because once somebody else has touched the book, he won't buy it. Fingerprints on it, and he won't touch it. He's one of these people. You can imagine the kind of jewelry he makes. A finger mark on the book, and it's possible. So they get, as soon as they come in, before they're even unpacked, he comes and he unpacks them, and he looks through and he takes what he wants, and then they put the rest on the shelf. So he says the other day he went to they called him in, he went there and looked, and there was a book that he really loved, 300 rand, and he started figuring to himself what that book used to cost. Used to be able to get it for 80 rand. 300 rand, is it really worth it off that book? 300 rand, it's ridiculous. So he told the bookshop that no, he wants to think about it, it's not so they said, but they can't, the only volume they've got, they can't keep it for him any longer. So he said, put it on the shelf meanwhile, and he goes back. And he's thinking, should he, shouldn't he, and he doesn't sleep the whole night, he's a fanatic. He says, but it's so funny, he says, if somebody would have come into my shop that day and would have bought a ring for 3,000 rand and would have asked me for a 10% discount, he says, without hesitating, I would have given them the 10% discount. Even if I knew that by saying no, they would still buy the ring. A person buys, he's paying cash, he asks for 10% discount. Sure, you can have the 10% discount. So I was willing to give away 300 rand and get nothing. But to spend 300 rand and get a book, I had to go home and think. And I go and figure that out. That's a good cash, isn't it? What's the psychology? The one is an investment. He's spending the 300 rand and he's getting a book that he can't do. But to give the discount, he can. What's the answer? No, it's also for the mysticism shiur. Yeah. No. In his case, that certainly isn't so. In his case, that certainly isn't so. Sorry? Yeah, okay, but it's still the book is always an investment in a book. The answer is a very simple answer. Money didn't change hands. That's all. He didn't pay out the money. Had the person not asked for the 10%, had the person said, right, here's 3,000 rand. Now, Mr. So-and-so, do me a favor, give me 300 rand. What would you have said? What for? You're a mishulich, what are you collecting for? He would have said, give me 300 rand. What's the difference? To actually take the money out and hand it over, when we're dealing with real money, then it feels. Then one feels all sorts of things. But if it's not, if it's just book entries, it doesn't feel the same. Now, the good businessman are the few people to whom it does feel the same. A good businessman is a person who treats money as a commodity. A spiritual person doesn't. A spiritual person treats money as koach, as potency. It's not a thing. It's something to be used. It's not something to be accumulated. But a good businessman, a materialistic person, doesn't. He sees it on, if he's asked to give a 10% discount, he sees 300 rand. And he sees himself putting his hand into his pocket, and he will fight, and he'll reduce that discount to 5% or to 2.5% if he can. Even though it makes a difference, even though he would have decided that it can bear the 10% discount, it hurts him. It really hurts him to give it as much as it would be to take out 300 rand from his pocket and give it. That's what it is to him. It's a different thing, whereas other people feel, forget it, it's a bit of goodwill, and the person feels good, and I've done the sale, and I've made my profits, or something. Let him go, let him take the ring, pay me less the discount, and everybody's happy. It's a different way of doing business, it's a different way of feeling things.
Is this our credit card problem?
Yeah, that's exactly what a credit card is, of course. That's how these casinos work as well. To remove you from the reality of passing money backwards and forwards. It would never work the same if you actually had to pass money backwards and forwards. In fact, even supermarkets with cash registers at the end, that's already the chidush there. While you're buying the article, you don't have to pay. You're putting it into your trolley. It's not real. More into your trolley. You just feel richer as your trolley is getting bigger. You just think of all the pleasure. Then you come up to the cash register, now you've got to pay for it. So they go and put it all back on the shelves, you don't do it. So that was already the beginning. Putting the cash register at the end, away from the goods, was the beginning of the understanding that you must remove the purchase from the payment of money to make it all unreal, which is really all against the principles of halacha in a sense. And that's what we're doing with nezikin. With nezikin, we don't see it as money. The fact that I've made that scratch, that's 100 rands worth of damage, I've taken 100 rands from that person. That's what I've got. And I've got it in my... Well, I don't really have it in my pocket. That's also one of the differences. I haven't benefited. But in a sense, I have. Since I owe him that 100 rand, I am now 100 rand richer than I need to be at his expense. That's habayli metaplim ben aveilu. That carcass that's lying over there is his. It's the nizak's. The rest of it, the rest of its value is what I've taken. It's not a question of he had an ox before, he's got an ox now. The only difference is it was alive, now it's dead. But that's not the way it's going to look. What we've got to look is before he had 100 and now he's got 10. I've taken 90. I've taken value from him. It's not the object that I've taken that has been changed. I've taken value from him. And that's the way that the whole area of nezikin has to be seen. And that's this whole analysis. How does the Torah want us to see it? Merely to replace him with what he had? Am I looking at the hardship I've caused him? Or am I looking at the taking of value? And in this fact, in this way, I'm causing him more hardship by making him be metapel ben aveilu. But it preserves the correct emotional relationship between mazik and nizak. I've taken value, I've got to replace value. That's it. That's what that relationship is. It's a monetary relationship. It's not a relationship of objects, of removing one object from another. Is it the same with a ganav? No, ganav is different. We're going to see that further on in the Masech, but ganav is different. Ganav is an object. I've got to put him back to where he was before I came. That's the ganav is different. It's not a value thing. There, it's an object thing.
Is that why if he's slaughtered and sold it, so that?
No, that's for other reasons. But the halacha, for example, is if I steal his car and I spray paint it another color, that car becomes mine. Because I can no longer give it back to him as it was. And that is my chiyuv. It's not just a value thing. That car is now mine. And now I've got to replace for him what he had.
So in the one hand you're trying to say that in order to really appreciate the value of money, you should feel the pain of earning it and giving it away.
Yes.
And when you're giving Sudoku, it should be painful.
It is painful. The I say yes, one should and one shouldn't.
That takes away then that feeling of it's Hashem that's giving me the.
Okay. Let me word it a little bit differently. Like with all midas, the midah that you use for other people must be the opposite for the midah you use for yourself. Cruelty is meant to be used on yourself. Kindness is meant to be used on other people. We tend to do it the other way around. When we want to be cruel, we use it on other people. When we want to be kind, then we use it on ourselves. Miserliness is meant to be used for ourselves. Generosity is meant to be used for other people. But we use the opposite. And our wife comes and says they want to buy a new dress. We think, a new dress already? What for? What do you need it? You've got a wardrobe full. When we walk past and we see a nice suit or a nice tie, we say to ourselves, treat myself. So what? Good. Okay. What's it? So we use miserliness on ourselves. We use miserliness for others, and we use generosity for ourselves. But it's supposed to be the opposite. The good midas are meant to be used on other people, and the bad midas are meant to be used on ourselves. So it's the same with money, Henry. When you're looking at somebody else's money, you've got to look at it as money, as cash. When you're using your money, you've got to look at it as potency. So when it comes to questions of nezikin and so on, then you've got to look at it that way. When you're looking at tzedakah, then you've got to look at it differently. Henry, I've answered your question, but you weren't listening.
No.
Now let's look at the sugi inside. Chavti b'tashlume nizkoi. Chavti b'nizkoi loik tani elo b'tashlume nizkoi. And now that you understand what the Gemara is analyzing, you realize why the Gemara immediately jumps onto this diuk, the word tashlum. Where the Mishnah could have said, Chavti b'nizkoi, I have become responsible for the damage. Or, am I responsible for tashlum, for the payment of the damage? What are we looking at? Is the damage an object, or is the value what we're looking at? The tashlum shows me what I've got to do is reinstate the value. It's not the nezek that I'm responsible for. I'm responsible for the value that I've deprived him of.
You
Tanina lahod the Tanur Rabbonin, that confirms what we've learned in the Braise. Tashlume Nezek, the term, the phrase Tashlume Nezek, payment for Nezek, Melamed Sha'abaylim Metaplim Benevela, teaches us that I've got to pay value. We're looking at diminishment of value, and I've got to replenish the value that I've diminished, meaning as a consequence of that, that Abaylim Metaplim Benevela. So the Gemara now wants to analyze from where does this come. That we've deduced that in the Loshon of the Mishnah is clear. Where do we get it from in the Loshon of the... Where does it come from in Chumash? So we have three sources from which this halacha comes. Omer Rabbi Amid Omer Akro, Makir Nefesh Behema Yishalmena. So let's look at that inside. Vayikra Kav Dalud, what posuk is it? If a man kills an animal, he shall pay for it, soul for soul. Says the Gemara, Al takre yeshalmeno elo yashlimeno. Don't read that yeshalmeno, but read it yashlimeno, says Rashi. End of the first fat line. Benizkei liktani de Levi mashma shi yeshalim shor gomur chay vuhu yitoy les hanavelo. If it would have said chavti benizkei, then I would have had to reinstate it, giving him a live ox and taken the nevela, giving him back the object that he had before. We're not dealing in values, then we're dealing in objects. He had an ox, I must give him an ox. Who then takes the nevela? I take the nevela. Elo betashlumi nizkei, demashma hashlomo. The word tashlum implies hashlomo. Sheyitul nizak es hanevelo, that the nizak takes the nevelo, v'zeh mashlim loy mashe pechatetui miso. And I have got to pay him the quantitative amount, the amount of money that death has diminished his, by which the death of his animal has diminished his estate. That's what there's an event which has been caused by me, which has diminished the value of his estate, and I've got to be mashlim that difference. Tashlume nizkei melamed loshon hashlomo mashlim loy nizak. Abaylim metaplim benevela kloima noitlin es hanevela. That means that the baylim has to take the nevela. Yashlimeno mashma sheyeshalim hamoisa. Yashlimeno implies that he's got to pay the difference. Yashlim. Got to pay the difference. I think that what Rashi is saying is that the Loshon Metapli Benevela implies have the hassle of the Nevela. Right? That's what it implies. Says Rashi, what the Sugi is worried about is not the hassle. The hassle is the consequence. What's important is noitliness on Nevela. It belongs to them. Making the point that we've made before, we're not deciding who is burdened with it. Really, if we're looking at the burden, the mazik should have the burden. What's it got to do with the nizak? It's just a question of who does it belong to. It belongs to the nizak. There's been no change in the ownership of the nevela. All that has changed is the diminishment of the assets of his estate. Says Tosfos, Yashli Meno. Asks Tosfos, we don't have to go to Vayikra to learn this. We could learn this from our own sugya in Shmos. Where does it say in Shmos, Baal Habor Yeshalem? Where's the parasha of Boaz? Of Bo? Yeah. V'chi yiftach ish Boaz shmois chaf aleph. Namad gimel and namad aleph. V'chi yiftach ish Boaz ki yichre ish Boaz v'lo yichasenu. V'nofal shoma shoyru chamoyer. An ox or a donkey falls into the pit. Baal haboer yishalim. The Baal haboer must pay kesef yoshiv li ba'olav. Amesu yiloy. Ask Tosfos, learn it from there. Baal haboer yishalim. Don't read yishalim, ela yashlim. That's Tosfos' kasha. Answers Tosfos. Baal haboer yishalim ein lidrosh yishalim yashlim. You can't use that rosh there. Aval yishalmeno mashma shehabehemo atzmo yishalim. Yishalmena implies that the behemo will be mashlim. So let's compare these two psukim. Here it says in Lamed Dalet, Baal haboer yishalim. Clearly it says the owner of the pit has to pay. Okay, what's he going to pay with? Money. Kesev yoshiv li ba'olav, he pays with money. Whereas here in Vayikro, umaki nefesh behemo, and person who smites the life of an animal, yishalmena. He will pay it. Nefesh tachas nefesh. Says Tosfos, that implies you pay with the animal. You use the animal for the payment. Umaki nefesh behemo yishalmena. With the nefesh habehema of which he smit yishalmena. Says Tosfos v'zei efshar, and that can't be shekvar meso, because it's dead already, and it says nefesh tachas nefesh, it's got to be equitable, and this wouldn't be equitable to give him the nefesh behema. Lefichach yesh lidrosh yashli meno. Therefore, the drosha is yashli meno. Now, the way Tosfos is learning it. What does the Yashli Mena go on? On the balance of the amount or of the value of the carcass? On the value of the carcass. The carcass is Mashlim. That's how Tosfos seems to be learning. You've got to pay for the damage less the Hashlomo, which is affected by the value of the carcass. So if the total damage is, if the ox was worth 100, you only pay 90, and you're mashlim the 100 with the carcass. That's how Tosfos learns it. Not like Rashi. Rashi says, Yashlimenu mashma sheyeshalem hamoisa. And that's Tosfos' kasha. According to Rashi, where the word Yashlimenu seems to imply that tashlumin means you pay the difference, why not learn it from Bo? Answers Tosfos, it's not that just that you pay the difference. Yashlimenu implies, in the case of Yashlimenu, that it's the carcass which is the difference. And you've got to pay in cash the balance. You've got to pay in cash the amount less the value of the carcass, because the carcass is mashlim the difference.
So the word yashli mena is a contraction of yashli mimena.
Yes.
That's the first impression I got.
Yeah, could be. Mm-hmm.
That is something that yeshal mena. Yeshalem
mimena. Mimena, yeah. Mashma shehabahim atzmo yeshalem, yeah. That's the simple word. That's the simple pshat. It's suggesting that the drushya is from the yashlim mimena or yeshalim mimena, which is in drushya is okay, where you can have two letters which contract into one. So you could have yeshalim and insert an additional mem there, which would imply yeshalem mimena, you pay out of it. And that's the drosha. Now, there's a very important nafkimina, because according to Rashi, the word yeshalem itself implies compensating the difference. It comes from the word sholem. The word itself implies that. According to Tosfos, it doesn't. The word yeshalem has got nothing to do with that. The word yeshalem means payment. It's not from the shin lamed mem that we're learning it. It's from this particular form and context that we're learning. Whereas Rashi says, no, Yashli Mena Mashmashi Yishalem HaMoisa. So that is Rabbi Ami's limud. Rav Kahana Omer Mehocho im Torif Yitorif Yivi'ehu Eid. Atreifa lo Yishalem. That's in Shmoyes Chof Beis. Where is that? What posuk? Posuk Yud Beis. Now here we've got to look at the Rashi in the Chumash. So the case here is a Shomer Socher, somebody who's paid to look after the animal. So I pay somebody to look after my ox, and while doing so, it gets attacked by a wild animal. So then the halacha is im torif yitorif yivieu eid. I must bring a witness. If it has been attacked by a wild animal, I've got to bring witnesses that it was beyond my control. Hatreifa lo yishalim. What does that mean? Hatreifa lo yishalim. The carcass he shall not pay. Says Rashi in Chumash. Hatreifa lo yishalim. Eina omer treifa lo yishalim. It doesn't say with an indefinite article. Treifa will not be paid. Ela hat treifa. In a particular case, the carcass will not be paid. Yesh treifa shu mishalim, v'yesh treifa she'ena mishalim. There's a case where you have to pay, and there's a case where you don't have to pay. Treifas chatul v'shual v'nemiyo mishalim. If it's one of the small cats, or a fox, or one of these animals, you have to pay for it, because you could have prevented it. Treifas ze'ev, ari, v'doi, v'nachash. If it's a lion, or a bear, or a wolf, or a snake, eina mishalim, then you're potter. So implied in the word atreifa lo yishalim is a restriction, a limitation. There is a case where atreifa lo yishalim, but there are cases where you do have to pay. Now let's look at the Gemara inside. Keep your chumash open. Let's look at the Gemara inside. So he learns from here. Rav Kahana learns from here. Omer Mehocha. In Torah, if you Torah, yivieihu eid atreifa lo yishalim, which we can rephrase as ad treifa yishalim, treifa atzma lo yishalim. If we rephrase and we re-vowel, then it will read as follows: im toruf yitoruf yivieihu ad treifa lo yishalim. But it's very difficult, because what he's doing is saying, it doesn't say ad treifa yishalim, it says ad treifa lo yishalim, doesn't it? So how are we going to learn here? He wants to learn ad treifa yishalim, you've got to pay up to the point of the carcass. Treifa atzma lo yishalim, but you don't have to compensate for the carcass. Says Rashi, how does Rashi explain this limud? This is how it's darshini. Im torif yitorif asher bipshiyoso shel shomer socher. If the ox gets attacked by a wild animal through the carelessness of the shomer socher, daikro b'shomer socher k'siv k'damim ba'shoil parshas ni'enemra b'shomer socher. Because as we learn in Bava Metzia, this parsha is talking about a shomer socher. Then yevi'ehu ad hatreif. Ad hatreif, then yevi'ehu ad hatreifa yishalim. Kol hahezek ad demei hatreifa. Or let's rephrase that. Yevi'ehu ad hatreifa, which means yishalim kol hahezek ad demei hatreifa. Aval demei hatreifa atzma lo yishalim. But not the demei hatreifa. So Rashi on Gemara is using the Rashi on Chumash. And he's saying, Rashi is saying, I taught you on Chumash that in this posuk both cases are stated, the one where you do have to pay and the one where you don't, because of the hay of treifa. Are you with me? Look again in the posuk. The pashtus of the posuk is it's talking about oines. It's talking where you don't have to pay. And that's going to be Tosfos as kashi, isn't it? Im toruf yitoruf yivieu eid hatreifa lo yishalim. Meaning, the pashtus, you don't have to pay for this attack of the wild animal. Why not? Because it's oines. Says Rashi, but it doesn't say treifa lo yishalim. You don't have to pay for wild attacks. It says, hat treifa, there is a case of wild attack where you don't have to pay, implying that there are cases where you do have to pay. On the cases where you do have to pay, Rav Kahana's darshaning. How much do you have to pay? Ad treifa. only at a trefl. So you need the Rashi on Chumash for this Rashi. Otherwise you can't understand what Rashi is doing. The Nizak metapel the Terach ben Avela l'moichro, because the Nizak is metapel ben Avela. Asks Tosfos, Lo Yishalim, Af Agav Dikro b'Shoyim Esocho Ksiv. Asks Tosfos, what is this pasuk talking about? It's talking about a Shoyim Esocho. The potu me'oinsim. And a Shoyim Esocho is potu from oinis. And what greater oinis is there than a wild animal attacking the ox? So what is Rashi's answer? Not all cases of wild animals attacking the ox are oinis. Sometimes it's little, they're little wild animals which you could have prevented. And that is implied by the letter hatrefel. Mikol mokim midichtiv ad hatrefel lo yishalim. However, since it says ad hatrefel lo yishalim, yesh lilmo yidaheicha de yishalim lo yishalim klum bishvil hatrefel atzma. You can still learn from it that where there is a chiyuv to pay, even if it's not shomei socher, even if it's another case, where there is a chiyuv to pay, you will not have to pay for the carcass. So Tosfos gets into difficulty here because of this. And the beauty is that you now understand it's from this Gemara. It'll be interesting to see in the Meforshim and Rashi in the Chumash where they attribute the source from. When Rashi says that you see from the hay of Atrefa that there is a case of wild animal attack where the shomer is chayev, where does Rashi get that from? I say he gets it from our Gemara. You see from Rav Kahana's drush that there's a case where the shomer socher has to pay, even in this very posuk. Where is it? Says Rashi, where it's a little animal that comes and attacks him. It's a shepherd's job to look after, to protect him from the little wild animals. And if he didn't, it's a pshia. But Tosfos runs into difficulty, and Tosfos makes it a little bit more far fetched. So it's true that in this case there is no chiyuv to pay for the carcass. But where there would be a chiyuv to pay, where there is no chiyuv to pay at all because it's onus, however, where there would be such a chiyuv in other cases, you need to know that you're going to be chayiv, but not for the carcass. So we have two machlokes in Rashi and Tosfos here. The one is whether yashlimeno is a general limud that the term yashalim must be understood as compensating for a loss of value. That's what the word yashalim means. When you pay for something, you're paying for loss of value. Tosfos says no, it's specific to that pasuk in that context. And the second machlokes is whether implied in the posuk of Trefa lo yishalim there is a chiyuv even in the case of shomer socher, and on that chiyuv we learn ad hatrefa yishalim, that when you have to pay, you pay only ad hatrefa but not including the trefa. According to Tosfos, there's no such implication, but nevertheless we learn that even in those cases where there will be a chiyuv to pay, not in this case covered by this posuk, but in other cases where there will be a chiyuv to pay, the payment will be ad hatrefa, not including the trefa. Good news, yeah.